Blog Talk Radio.
Not a damn chance we're going to play that one for now. Gentlemen, liberals, Democrats, Republicans, snowflakes, I don't care what you call yourselves. This is B-Train's Off the Rails Uncensored Part 2. And seeing as how it's my 30th shindig, I figured why not add some fun into this mix instead of me stuttering around, stammering around, answering Instagram questions. I'd be willing to answer some phone calls if you would please, because why? That's just how crazy I am, and that's just how, no pun intended, off the rails I can be. Now, granted, yesterday we spoke about what everyone's talking about, and that's Jinder Mahal this, Roman Reigns that, but no one seems to be mentioning the fact that Matt Riddle called out Brock Lesnar. He wants to be the one to retire the Beast Incarnate. Big step up from Evolve? Maybe so. But I believe Matt can do it. I mean, the guy wrestles barefoot, and he, you know, kind of looks very similar to one of the Von Erichs, but he's not. He is a nice gentleman whom I believe is going to be in WWE soon. Whether you guys accept it or not, eventually they all do. They as being, you know, look, Steve Cutler, one of Danny's boys. Matt Riddle, one of Danny's boys. Tag team champions on Impact Wrestling and TNA. They came from where? The Monster Factory. So first and foremost, I'm going to be discussing with you what I think, you know, makes good professional wrestling. And that's going to be the first leg of this shindig, the 30th celebration of yours truly, the Dirty 30. Woo! Of good old B-Train. And no, I have not had anything to drink. However, I do have a nice glass of water, although none of you can see it. It is a glass of water, I promise you. Anyways, so what makes good professional wrestling? Matches that tell stories, guys that are unique, and this is just based off of my opinion, guys like Bray Wyatt, guys like Aleister Black, guys like Darby Allin. So am I going a little darker here? Yeah, you could say that. There's a few dark... What is the definition, though, of a dark gimmick? No one knows, right? Dark as in, you know, the first open Satanist in WWE history, that being Aleister Black, does that hinder his in-ring performance? No. I guarantee you this dude is beyond amazing in the ring. You know, there's not just a gentleman that makes, you know... Gentlemen that are unique, you know, that make wrestling unique. So, no, I'm stammering upon words here. Sorry, I promised myself I wouldn't do that. But, anyways, as I was saying, what makes a good wrestling match? You have your stereotypical heel, your very flamboyant baby face, or a very good baby face to make the match go a little bit smoother. Yeah, somewhat. But here's the deal. Oh, man. Okay, so I'm just, you know, I'm not going to answer any Instagram questions as of the moment for today simply because I know you're wishing me all a happy birthday. Thank you. Oh, and before I forget, I want to acknowledge our lovely, awesome fans in France. I want to say a little something towards you. If I offend you, you know, please do not get upset. I know I'm getting off topic here, but tu es incroyable. You are awesome. Thank you so much, you know, for listening to our show. I want to give a shout out to the Australian who listened to our show. Thank you also. Also, the awesome folks up north in Canada and the amazing people in Taiwan. Thank you so much for listening to Wrestle Radio and Off the Rails Uncensored. Now, back to business, folks. Back to business. I'll get to acknowledgments at the tail end of my show. What makes a good wrestling match? This could be defined in a lot of ways. You have a good heel who gets the crowd going. You have the baby face who also gets the crowd going and gets, you know, can just feed off of the crowd. And also one that puts asses in seats. So what makes a good match? I'll tell you, you know, there's examples I can give you. You know, if I watch WWE Network or Flow Slam, I can list on a piece of paper what, you know, is a good, okay. Ethan Page versus Darby Allin at Evolve in San Antonio around January, I believe it was. So Darby Allin is psychotic when it comes to wrestling. But he's, you know, why? It's because he's got so much charisma and so much to tell a story with. So that's just general consensus, whether you agree with me or not, is that a wrestling match has to tell a story, because nowadays fans are upping the ante by learning the terminologies and just going based off what their own opinion is. So what makes a good wrestling match in general? Does it have to have a big name? Well, wouldn't that make the promoter happy if his big name that he signed, you know, to a multi-million-dollar contract wrestles a damn good match? Does it have to be a 25, 27-minute match? Unless it's the main event of the entire night, then no. Get the fuck out of here for people who have to say, you know, a back-and-forth match to be entertained. That's just my opinion, okay? You don't need a match that's going to captivate you every single time, because if you do, great. But what am I getting? Okay, so what makes a wrestling fan want to go to a wrestling show and see your match? I can almost guarantee you what's going to make you come see a match is this. The guy that you've been looking forward to, like a Sting and Hogan scenario, when Sting and WCW was facing, you know, feuding with Hogan, I guarantee you there's Sting fans and Hogan fans that, you know, just want to come see those two. So what makes or what defines a good wrestling match? That's going to differ from a lot of people. There's certain fans, like I said yesterday, that like the flippy shit. There are certain fans that don't care what this is as long as they see two guys beating the ever-living shit out of each other. And then, and only then, you get the type of people that like the heels all the time, when, you know, they cheer for him hardcore, and they never relinquish their liking for him. I happen to be one of those people guilty of that. So, good example is I like Alexa Bliss. My friend, the host with the most, likes, just saying her name makes me want to, yeah. It makes me want to hurl in a Home Depot bucket, I'm sorry. I'll get to ranting and raving about Bailey later, you know, in a kind of cheerful, fun, playful way. But that's another story for another day. So what makes a good wrestling match? Obviously, there has to be a story in between the two. If you don't tell a story or you don't build any kind of arc, even like a mini story arc between the two, what is the reason for us watching you? Why? What purpose does it serve to throw people in there, in that ring, for us to go pay the $10 admission fee or $20 or whatever the fee may be to come see you. What have you done to be entertaining? What have you done to get yourself out there on social media? See, because a lot of the times you go into a match from a worker's perspective, you think, well, if I try this move, I know it's going to get the crowd to go. Well, this type of crowd, so I know what to make it ebb and flow and just go. Some people, some workers know what they're doing. Like, I'll give you a great example. Dak Draper from NWL. Sure, you know, they chant tidy whities, but that has gotten over. The crowd, you know, sometimes the chants are more over than the worker. No, Dak Draper does his job as, you know, the champion for NWL Kansas City. He does his job by getting the crowd going. He's very, you know, he relates to them in the way that his character is supposed to relate to the crowd. And that, to me, it stands out as a great worker. Also, just so you guys know, the Royal Bloods, I used to work with them a long time ago in a company that shall not be, actually, fuck it. I worked with them in a company that I've given more credit than credit is due, because obviously, you know, when you start out, you don't know what you're doing. So, anyways, what am I getting at? The Royal Bloods are your stereotypical baby faces. They get the crowd going. They are like NWLs. I guess you can compare them to the Hardy Boys because of all the high-flying, high-risk maneuvers that they do, like the 450 splashes, the Asai moonsaults, the Suicida Tope, or whatever, you know, whatever move we call it before Mauro Ranallo decided to quit WWE. Those two and Dak Draper are the biggest standouts. No. You have Niles Planquet with his little sidekick. And God, Beauregard, or I'm sorry, I'm pretty much butchering someone's name like I did to Daniela. So my apologies. You have Amber Lay, who stands out as the antagonist to Marty Bell. And yes, I'm going over NWL. I realize that a lot of you people Instagramming, I'm not answering your questions just yet, because I told you I didn't want to do that today, because I don't want to stammer upon a question that gets my attention. So that is a prime example of current wrestling, local wrestling in Kansas City. You know, out east, God almighty, if you're a heel, it's very hard to get the crowd to boo you, because they like doing the opposite of what they're supposed to cheer for. You can't control a crowd, just saying. So what makes a great wrestling match would also adds up to that formula. Like I just gave the example from NWL Kansas City, you have Dak Draper, who's a stereotypical heel, and then you have Lakota Red Cloud, who is a babyface. It's well over with the crowd. You have Michael Strider and Jeremy Wyatt and their little feud with Thor Terrio. So it's just one of those things you have to pay attention to. So as in, the stories have to build up one another. There has to be a long-standing feud, but you know, the minute the two workers get in there, two wrestlers get in there, or two gals get in, you know, the same thing, two wrestlers get in there, they have to have a chemistry. One has to offset the other. So when you have Bailey and Alexa, or when you have Becky and Natalia, which is, you know, the current WWE SmackDown Live women that are feuding one another, you see the stories they tell. So what, aside from the stories they tell, what makes a good wrestling match? The promos is what certain people say, and certain people say it's their in-ring. I say it's an all-around mix, because if you don't have the promo skills, you will not have a story to tell in the ring. Unless you're blessed, you know, like Lesnar was years ago, and thank God he doesn't talk, because he has Paul Heyman to do so. Finn Balor is involved in a five-way match, and you know, when he was doing his promo, it set the tone for the five-man match. See, there's a story between each person. Bray Wyatt, Seth Rollins has a history, you know, Shield and the Wyatts. Samoa Joe and Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns. I mean, you got Samoa Joe, Seth Rollins, Bray. Finn Balor is now in this dance. Samoa Joe's pretty much been involved in pretty much everyone's life lately. I mean, Finn Balor and him have worked against one another before in the past. But what am I, you know, what are my motives to, you know, see a good match? What is, in my opinion, a great match entail? You know, how, what is good wrestling? I've seen shitty wrestling on the indies. I have seen awesome wrestling. It just depends, you know, it depends on whether or not the guys click with one another. So you have to put your foot down and say, okay, what am I looking for when I go to a match? Am I going to psychoanalyze this shit too much? Am I going to raise the bar? I hope to God you raise the bar, because guess what, folks? Wrestling is becoming so universal to the point where the independents are getting attention. That includes Evolve, CZW, IWGP, PWG is still around. They have produced guys like Kevin Owens. They have produced guys like Sami Zayn. They have produced guys like Samoa Joe, Shinsuke Nakamura, Akira Tozawa, Asuka. So, in other words, pay attention. Pay attention to the indies, because if you want a decent-looking match, you're going to get one. You're going to get that and then some. Ring of Honor, you know, they have new signees. If you haven't already checked out, he was one of a guest on our show long, long time ago, back in probably September. Travis Flip Gordon, you know, who did some interesting 450 splashes, you know, high-risk maneuvers and all that. If you like Ring of Honor, please, you know, don't hesitate to watch their programming. They are a very, they're second, you know, or, you know, they're to be close to WWE in rankings in the world, and New Japan is ranked very close-knit to them. That must mean they put on pretty hell good matches. That's all I'm going to tell you. So, that's my first leg of the show, discussing with you all what I think, what constitutes as a good match. And I'm going to talk to you about something near and dear to my heart that I don't really get a chance to discuss with you all. Pro wrestling managers and what they mean to the business. Now, a lot of us are told that managers are not paid well by the promoter, and the truth is, promoter doesn't want to pay us. That's the honest-to-God truth. It hurts, but it's true. A guest by the name of Graham Bell basically stated, you know, managers, you have to be a big name, otherwise guys don't want to be around you. If they haven't heard of you, why should they be managed by you? It's more of the same thing in the world of professional wrestling. You have to prove yourself. You can't just, hi, my name is Joe Blow Wrestler, and I'm going to go wrestle in the ring like a bunch of yard tards, and we're going to just impress our family and friends. You're not getting company attention at all. You're getting attention in a negative way. So, anyways, back to, you know, pro wrestling managers that influenced me big time. Jim Cornette, I'd say, because he was a manager that could get the crowd going. His mic skills were so good. You know somebody also that influenced me, he's not a manager, but Brutal Bob Evans told me, you know, you want to be successful, get you the quotationary. It's a paperback book. You can get it off Amazon for like $4. And just going to throw this out here. The quotationary is extremely helpful, because when you're a pro wrestling manager and you just go based off of what you read or see or imitate, that's fine. You know, imitation is the cheapest form of flattery, they say. So who else was an influence to me growing up. Did I want to be a pro wrestling manager? No, but I thought, guys like Bobby Heenan, who had like a cornball sense of humor, just like Jim Cornette, and it was so awesome seeing these two, whether they flubbed or not, outside the ring where the guys got their hands on them. There's a lot of close calls with Jim Cornette. There was times when he did get knocked out. The art of being a professional wrestling manager, since I'm seeing a lot of the questions pop up on our Instagram, on both, they're blowing up like crazy. You got to train first. I would go see Kenny Bolin if he's available. If he's really healthy, he's extremely healthy right now. So, go see him. If you want to ask Jim, just send him a proper message on Twitter, inbox him. Jim's a very nice guy. I met him back in 2008 or 2009. I don't think he remembers my ass, but then again, he's seen a lot of faces over the years, including in Smoky Mountain Wrestling and also when he first entered WWE. Jim is quite the loudmouth, but you love him for it. But why else would people pay attention to what he says? Kind of telling the truth about certain people, and then you say, oh, well, he's wrong about this guy, he's wrong about that guy. It's a hit and miss, because you can't base things off of what one person says. But as far as influences go, man, aside from Cornette, us managers that Jimmy Hart, Mr. Fuji, Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, the Grand Wizard, the Colonel, Sensational Sherry, who was an amazing valet in my opinion. Sherry's probably one of my all-time favorites, because if I had to go back in time and bring her into now, my God, she would wipe the floor with Maryse, in my opinion, who just happens to be kind of a valet for the time being. So all I'm going to tell you is, managers in the world of professional wrestling, is it good or bad? It all depends on how you perceive them, or perceive us. I consider myself a manager, even though I just banged on the mat and, look snazzy, if you will. I'm not going to say pretty, because I do need some work on the schnoz, if you ask me. But it all also depends on the promotion. Are they manager heavy? Are there too many of them? Because even I have to admit, if there's too many managers for every wrestler, then that takes away from the show. The wrestler is the one that people came to see, not us. And speaking of professional wrestling managers, if you're trying to get yourself over, that's not a problem. But trying to get yourself over the wrestler, that becomes the problem, because then you become the attention whore. And I, for starters, worked with one of those. And this is just an observation. Is he doing more than me as a professional wrestling manager? Sure. In a backyard and company? Yeah. Am I bitter about him getting to outshine me? I'm not ever going to fucking tell you that, because here's the deal. I'm worried about what I'm doing, because I'm not going to put somebody's presence or what they're doing in front of me. So, and also, the people that shouldn't be managing, this is, again, just my opinion. If you aren't good on the mic and you speed up your words, how the fuck do you expect an audience to listen to you? I've seen managers in the past, like a Million Dollar Man, a Sensational Sherry. They get on that microphone, they absolutely floor the fuck out of it. They make it worthwhile. For back in their day, it was simple, because it's still simple now. You just have to learn what gauges the crowd and what doesn't. Now, speaking of managers, one of my very first assignments in the Midwest, since I've been doing this or learning this thing called pro wrestling for 8.5+ years, still learning because I just went to seminars. I never really did anything with it. But when I got to Larned, Kansas, I guess, what really gets a Midwest crowd going is a Middle Eastern heel. So, playing that role was fun, because I had had a lot of heat from the crowd. You know, it got the crowd going. And what's funny is, guys, being a part, I had to say it was the most fun. A guy by the name of Hassan Payne, very nice gentleman. I had fun with him because putting that microphone in my hand and basically getting the crowd all riled up and just hearing their boos was music to my ears. Because I don't mind people booing. As long as there's a reaction and it's not question marked, you know, by dead silence, you have got to learn that even if you're not a manager, you know, you got to put that mic in your hand, you got to own it. I fucking owned it and felt great about it. Was it on national TV? No. But it was against a certain somebody by, you know, the name of Trevor Murdoch. Nice gentleman also. And I had fun against him. He was he was very understanding and very cordial, you know. Talked to him in the back, and I just remember being there in Larned, and Trevor came over and, you know, discussed, hey, what do you want to do during this match? And it was fairly decent. I mean, the crowd booed because the match ended in disqualification, and it was fun. I mean, I never expected to have that much fun being a pro wrestling manager because a lot of times, like I said, unless your name is Sylvester Fox, Jimmy Hart, unless you are Jim Cornette, which that name is very, very extremely popular now because Cornette is a businessman. And am I kissing his ass? Yeah. Guarantee it. Because why? Jim made this business worthwhile as a manager. Okay, so Harvey Whippleman compared to Jim Cornette. One pushed the boundaries a little too far, you know, compared to the other. I would say Cornette probably, you know, runs his mouth, but, you know, for good reason, because he's just telling the wrestling world how it is. Bobby Heenan, I haven't touched on him. I firmly believe that guy is what you define as one of the pro wrestling managers, the greatest pro wrestling managers of all time, because that man understood the psychology and how to work a crowd. He was a former pro wrestler, and he just, the way that he was able to engage the crowd, the way that he was able to gain their reaction was just so funny. Looking back on all of his matches, even when he was managing against Andre and with Andre the Giant, just the way that he carried himself. And even on the broadcast announce team, you had Harley Race, who kind of managed, you know, Vader, and he, you know, I believe Harley Race even was a great manager because he understood the psychology of what to do to distract other guys because he had been, well, not victimized by J.J. Dillon. J.J. Dillon's another name that I forgot to mention on the list of managers that was pretty awesome as part of the Four Horsemen. So you got to understand, pro wrestling managers today, they don't exist because now we're just represented by Paul Heyman. But you do have people in Ring of Honor. And I believe one of them, you know, Prince, believe, I'm sorry. But if you look at Ring of Honor and you look at the managers, okay, Jim Cornette works with Ring of Honor, or has worked with Ring of Honor, maybe still does. You'd have to ask Jim. But what gets a pro wrestling manager over versus what gets a pro wrestler over? It's really fairly easy for pro wrestlers. You know, sometimes your stuff works, sometimes it doesn't. Same thing for managers. What is your bread and butter as a pro wrestling manager? Promos. If you cannot promo and give facial expressions or reactions, do you get the crowd going during a match, before a match, after a match, you're not a manager, which you are a slouch. And that's just personal observation, okay, folks? Because in 14 minutes, I'm going to go, well, off the rails and censored, B-Train's birthday edition. So in between that, I would like to start the advertisements. So here goes. For those of you wishing to attend an awesome, awesome wrestling school, they have a super camp coming up on July 7th and July 8th. Danny Cage's Monster Factory. Be sure to contact Danny Cage. If you don't, that's fine. It won't hurt Danny's feelings. He'll just, you know, tell you the ever so famous saying. Yeah, you'll figure it out. That's not his saying. But, oh, hell, I'll just say it. He'll say, go fuck yourself. Or you suck. So please, by all means, sign up for his camp. It's $2,500 for students with at least 1 year in-ring experience. For students with non-experience, it's $3,500 to sign up. It's $2,000 for, I guess, the lifetime membership. If that information is incorrect, please text Danny. His number should be on the website at www.monsterfactory.org. And also, for those of you who are, you know, trying to get to a wrestling school in Kansas City, please, please, please sign up at NWL Kansas City. The Training Performance Center is in North Kansas City. For those of you wishing to set up a tryout with Derek Stone, you can do so online. You can message him on Facebook. You can contact NWL. They respond to your message within 15 minutes. It's easier just to sign up through Derek. So you can message him. Again, it's Derek Stone on Facebook.com. NWL or /www.facebook.com/NWL Kansas City. Sign up for tryouts. It's $20. Make your dreams come true as a professional wrestler. They have NWL Kansas City and NWL St. Louis this Saturday. The showcase of showcases will happen and occur on May 27th at Scottish Rite Temple. Doors open at 7 p.m. If you haven't gotten your tickets, go to Ticketfly.com. For exclusive offers or rewards, look under Facebook for the promo code. You can check that out. It should be on the Facebook page right there. Bada boom. Coolest network in the room. If you want to subscribe to WWE, go to WWE.com, subscribe to the network, click on network, type in a valid username, the email, and a password. Also, put a form of payment in, so later on when they bill you, it will be $10.99. After that, it's $9.99, but you get your first month free. And how can one obtain 3 months free? Or you can pay, you know, $29.97 for 3 months. That's 3 months, folks. If you get four of those cards, that's the whole year, and then some. So right now you get Money in the Bank, and also you will get Extreme Rules. For those of you wishing to get Extreme, you know, it's free. No hassle. For those of you wishing to see Evolve, go, you know, catch the action. Matthew Riddle, Ethan Page, Darby Allin, Desmond Xavier, Michael Elgin. You can go to flowslam.com. It's $9.99. Go to the Monster Factory Network. You want to catch free matches? It's free. Go to mfnetwork.com. Catch the craziness that is Monster Factory, Factory Fridays. And also catch some of the new students involved. And again, if you want to sign up to Danny's school, go ahead. He will gladly take a text to say if you want to join. If you don't want to join, that's on you. So here's the deal. If you want to make a child's wish come true, go to makeawish.org and become a make-a-wisher. Make that child smile. And, oh, by all means, by all means, type in the name of the superstar, the celebrity, the NBA, whichever person you want to, you know, make that child's wish come true with. It doesn't matter if it's Tom Cruise. It doesn't matter if it's The Rock. Dave Bautista, Randy Orton, Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, Nikki Bella, Bayley, Sasha Banks, Dean Ambrose, Bray Wyatt, Kevin Owens. As long as those awesome, awesome folks make your child's dream come true, have at it. Also, for the awesome fight against cancer, kick cancer's ass, go to SusanGComen.org, fight the good fight against cancer, and punch cancer right in the mouth. Because that's, you know, that's what you should do. For all of you awesome veterans, dudes, dudettes, awesome people who have served this country, if you are having a hard time finding employment, go to hireforheroes.org. They can assist you with the application that you are looking for, whether it be construction, whether it be whatever job you are looking for, they will help you out immediately. So go to that website, ASAP. Thank you for what you guys have done. And thank you for serving this country, and I know Memorial Day is coming up soon. So thank you for your awesome men and women who have served this country and made it better for all of us to be free. We thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for everything that you have done, for whether you're in the arms, you know, all in the armed services, National Guard, Marine Corps, Army, Navy, all of you make it count. So, with that being said, to make a break right back into professional wrestling, because isn't this what this is all about? So in the taglines I put, you know, WWE, ECW, Pro Wrestling Managers, Cornette, Bobby Heenan, Million Dollar Man, WCW, The Rise and Fall. I think that's pretty self-explanatory. Monster Factory, NWL, Wrestling Fans Perspectives versus a Worker's Perspective. Oh my, okay, so this might be a little funny because I get the vibe from certain people that they don't want to shake my hand, and that's fine. I also get the vibe that, that I'm not welcome in certain areas. That's fine by me as well. Do I want to get the reputation of not being well-liked? I can tell you right now, doesn't make any bit of difference to me what you do or not do. So, I mean, I'm about, you know, let's see, in 6 minutes, since I like doing this, messing with the host of the most is kind of funny. I'm sorry, I get sidetracked. This is going to be quite fun discussing what I think, because I usually do discuss what I think on pretty much a 100% basis. So, I'm going to read some of your questions because these are kind of funny. Did I ever think, making it to 30, that I would not go random? I believe, you know what? At 30 years old, even before 30, I was random. What are you talking about? That's pretty funny. So, yeah, I'm pretty much not going to stammer anymore, but your question is, do I think Bray Wyatt and Kevin Sullivan are similar? Oh man, Bray Wyatt and Kevin Sullivan. I'm laughing because this is why I say this, guys. If you watch professional wrestling and you've seen over the years what they thought of Kevin Sullivan, what they think of Bray Wyatt, yeah, they are similar because look at what Bray Wyatt does. Look at what Kevin Sullivan does. When he was the Taskmaster in WCW, when he was doing stuff out in NWA, and when he was doing stuff out in WCCW, Kevin Sullivan over the years was called a Satanist. He was a Satan worshiper and this, that, the other. Bray Wyatt is called as being odd and serial killer-like. So to answer that question straightforward, A lot of people will disagree with me, and some people will say that I'm sane. Most people will tell you I'm insane in the membrane. So, yeah. Kevin Sullivan and Bray Wyatt are very similar as far as weird promos and very strange and very dark. And it's kind of like what I like. Hell, if you watch Aleister Black, I mean, imagine the matches between Aleister Black and Finn Balor. Imagine what will occur, what will happen, what will go through one's mind when you see what goes on during promos. Because if Balor returns to being, you know, the demon Balor as everyone wishes him to be, then you're going to get one hell of a reaction. But back to your question, is Bray Wyatt similar to Kevin Sullivan? Man, that's a kind of an obvious one, don't you think? And yes, I will tell your name. Okay, Terry from Tulsa, Oklahoma. That's the first person from Oklahoma in, well, ever, that's asked, you know, asked a question on Instagram on my birthday. And thank you, Terry, for saying happy birthday. Do I have an affinity for dark gimmicks, and why do I have an affinity for dark gimmicks? And did I like The Undertaker during the ministry? I actually, guys, I'm not a big fan of that, or was not a big fan of him in the ministry. I didn't. It was intriguing, I'm not going to lie. He was darker. He's more vicious. He's more brutal. That's everyone's favorite Undertaker, is when he was, I guess, dark and brutal. And I don't know what else to tell you. I have an affinity for that. So, yes. To be quite honest, Terry, I do believe that Kevin Sullivan and Bray Wyatt are very similar, but you saying that they're not because Bray can work better. Okay, that's true and also false. Because it's been a while since I have seen Kevin Sullivan and where he was, you know, back where he was. The most I remember out of Kevin Sullivan was the Dungeon of Doom. And how they were, what they were working with. Very strange group, you know, kind of like the Wyatts. Very odd. And how they decided to do promos. And it's funny because you see him later on, you know, on YouTube discussing whether or not they thought he was a Satanist back in the day. I find that funny, you know, when people assume what workers are just because some fans are dumber than a sack of potatoes. I'm just being honest with you. Some of you really are. Oh, and also, in the next 45 minutes, I'm going to rip someone a new one because it's something that I saw. It was a post on Facebook that made me kind of cringe and also laugh. There's a lot of close-minded fucks in this business, and I find it funny that Facebook has become a platform for others in this business to just step all over each other and say they don't know much, or it's become a fighting ground amongst one another because it gets people's blood boiling, and I don't fucking care for that shit. So in the next 40 seconds, well, actually, I lied. In the next 50 seconds, I'm going to discuss with you all on my 30th birthday what really pisses me the fuck off about certain people's discussions that they post. I read them. I don't respond to them anymore because it causes a lot of headache and pain that I can't punch you right in the dick. Or if you're a woman, I don't punch you at all. I just bury my head in the pillow and hope to God that I wake up the next day, because it's basically called stupidity, in my opinion. So, in T-minus 10, 9, 6, 4, 3, 2, 1... The cost of personality. yesterday I traipsed across Facebook and I happened to see something about wardrobe from another worker. And he mentioned names like Kevin Owens, Ambrose. Oh, jeez. Okay, so, yeah, it was a post mentioned by some asshole who thinks he can wrestle in the indies, and I'm not going to mention names, but head hurts with all the traumatic pain from that post. If I'll just steal clothes from another homeless guy and shorts on this guy. Oh, yeah, Samoa Joe's name was mentioned, too. If you want to talk about wrestling gear, maybe you should take a trail back and see what the good old days of WCW had. For fuck's sakes, Rey Mysterio was wearing an outfit that made him look like the male version of Catwoman. You know, and Rey's a great worker and all, but it's just at the time, the fashion and stuff in wrestling, if you really want to talk about horrible wardrobe, I mean, look at what Bayley wears. Holy hell. One ponytail, and it's like, are you stuck in the fucking mid-90s, sweetie? Just saying, like, if you want to talk about wardrobe malfunctions, there's plenty of that. You know, Tamina looks like a bodyguard. Becky looks like, you know, what she's supposed to. I don't know what it's supposed to. I mean, because at least on the women's side of things, they have it together. On the men's side of things, does it mean anything if they dress in jeans or garb as long as they fucking entertain you? As long as they entertain you, okay? From what I saw in this post, I mean, it's pretty fucking arrogant because, you know, you're saying the mid-card guys don't make anything, so if you're 5 foot nothing, that makes you a non-superstar. So let me ask you something. Said person who wrote this post, whenever you watch professional wrestling, what are you looking for? It shows nothing about a cruiserweight going up against a heavyweight. Mid-carding guys make more than anybody in this fucking world that I know of, because if you look up salaries, dude, they're basing it off of T-shirt sales. They're basing it off that money does not go directly into the pocket of the wrestler. But if you market yourself and make appearances and you go places and you do things on the side like autograph signs, that's where your money comes. That's where it comes in. How do I know this? Because it works kind of similar to what the music industry is. Or, you know, it's just ridiculous because it's like just reading through this makes me wonder, like, why would you post something? Okay, so according to this person, the Usos rob homeless people. You know, Cena, of course, he wore jean shorts. But guess what? And despite our hatred for the guy, he got over it. You know, and saying Ambrose robbed a homeless guy, are you trying to have a dry sense of humor? Because if so, you fucking failed. Here's where you failed, dude. You worked against one of my good friends, and I'm not mentioning names to start drama on a podcast, but holy fuck. If I see, you know, that you're wrestling, you're a big guy, but you also suck ass. Technical shit that you're doing as an amateur former wrestler, great. When you say people have attitudes and call people names like Mark, you know who's the biggest Mark? Because you're the one fucking watching TV. You are the one that is apparently paying attention to their wardrobes, which, I don't know, dude. You know, a lot of questions come to mind. Why are you paying attention to what they wear instead of what they do in the ring? Obviously, Dean Ambrose must be doing something right because, as of the moment for now, he's the current Intercontinental Champion. So, I mean, you got to understand, six figures is exactly, yeah, jeez. The point is, you want to attack Kevin Owens as well in this post. Why would you pay? Again, how close-minded can you be? That's what my friend and I were saying, is how close-minded can people be when they post shit on Facebook? It's like, I don't know. You just have to pay attention. And I've said this many times, you have to pay attention to what you say, because you wanna be an extra for WWE. That's kind of a joke, dude. I told you I was going to talk about what really bothers me, and part of it is, you know, on social media, if you don't watch what you say, others will pay attention to it and roast you like a Thanksgiving turkey on Thanksgiving Day. So to say that, you know, you're just going to walk up to a homeless dude and steal the stuff off him, dude, wearing blue jeans and a wife beater makes you look homeless. Obviously, you know, you don't know what a homeless person looks like, because they could look like a normal person. They could look really tatted and rugged and beat up. After all, man, I've lived in New York, and I've seen homeless people, not just in New York, but in Kansas City, and I've seen the differences. There's not that many. And I know you said, well, I didn't say they weren't talented. I just don't say that a big guy or a little guy can beat up a big guy. That's understandable if it's Kalisto and Braun Strowman. But if you're saying, you know, if you're saying stuff on your freaking news feed on Facebook about middle shift guys, you know, I don't see what's wrong with you. I don't see what's wrong with what I said. That sounds familiar. Whenever you post something, you're going to get reactions on Facebook. That's just a given. So please understand, you know, please understand that whenever you relay stuff on Facebook about a wrestler or wrestlers that are already established and you have an indie career, get the fuck out of here. How close-minded can you be, dude? I'm going to pull up a salary number so that, you know, that can make this a point, because obviously it needs a point. So, estimated salary for, let's see, Dean Ambrose in 2015. You want, you know, this is according to sporttech.com, how much WWE wrestlers make. And the guys that you just mentioned, Triple H, $1.1 million basic salary, $1.65 million in yearly talent contract. And, of course, Ring Mac, CEO, Vince McMahon, $2.4 million. Okay, so the strategic officer makes $800,000. Kevin Dunn makes $800,000. Okay, so this is how it goes. Booking, wrestler granting right to book him or her for events which can sell tickets and TV rights. Wrestler also granted permission to WWE negotiate their behalf for merchandising, publishing, and endorsements, and personal appearances. Basically, you know, this is what they go through. Intellectual property, WWE holds exclusive rights to wrestlers' likeness, name, personality, content, gestures, and whatnot. So this has a lot of typos on their fucking website, some of them. Yes, The Rock, $3.5 million, 7% bonus for, what the heck is wrong, This is just a synopsis here. But, you know, if you're looking at these salaries, I mean, come on, there are six figures. Bray Wyatt, $254,200. Byron Saxton, $170,000. Dean Ambrose. Well, I think this is not accurate at all. But it's saying that he was the most wanted. He has a current market value of $4,250,000. And in 2014, he earned a salary of $425,000. A winning bonus of $125,926. A net worth of $3,243,243. So you got to understand, if you're going to make fun of a... In 2016, the man made salary of $850,000, a bonus of $283,000, net worth of $6 million. He, you know, look, dude, his market value, and my friend is right again, it's well over six figures that this fucking gentleman makes. And that's one guy you tried to bury and put in the ground because of fucking wardrobe. You think I don't have a sense of humor? Fuck you! I find one status and it's goldmine on my show. Because why? You're going to tell me I'm a mark and I run my mouth? Okay. We don't pay your salary? That's kind of untrue on the indies. In some ways, because the promoter, if he has enough money to give around, will give it divided based on what was earned, correct? So, you know, this gentleman that posted this happens to think because he's a promoter or whatever, wherever the fuck he is, that he can spout off the mouth at WWE. Why? Because they didn't take you because you were boring, bland, and not what they're looking for? Hell, if you'd been there in 2000, maybe you would have made it because not every gimmick was boring in WWE. And I'm just saying this. But that's just one thing. According to his contract, guys, and what I'm reading, $977,500 and $977,500. Total gross, dude, $2,838,707. This is on CelebrityGlad.com. Are these numbers, you know, look, it gives an entire detail what his net worth is. So, you know, per month, this is what it tells you a WWE superstar earns. It says salaries of WWE superstars vary from low six figures to millions upon millions annually. WWE registered their highest ever annual revenue for the fiscal year of 2015, which was more than $650 million. So a report revealed that an average WWE superstar rakes in about $500,000 in basic pay. Oh, man. Okay. So this, you know, Aiden English makes $175,000. AJ Styles, $500,000. Baron Corbin, $285,000. Even Braun Strowman is right up there, man, $350,000. Dean Ambrose, almost under a million, $900,000. This is just, you know, John Cena, $5 million private jet usage, which makes his overall income about $9 million. So Kane, $1,500,000 travel and accommodation. I mean, you're looking at these numbers, okay? Roman Reigns, merchandise, travel, and accommodation. So when they add stuff to it, what are we saying here? What am I going off of and why am I going off? Because you mentioned names like Kevin Owens and Samoa Joe. A part-timer salary, holy crap. Big Show, right up there, $1,300,000. Brock Lesnar is right at a cool $6 million. The Rock, $3,500,000. Merchandise and pay-per-view, private jet usage, merchandise. Okay, so these numbers, according to these figures, what I've just read. Now I'm gonna find Kevin Owens because obviously these numbers have to ring true. Because look, even Neville, who you said was a small guy, makes $300,000. Just looking at this, you know, you're looking at the full-timers, and mainly all of them are women. You have Stephanie McMahon. You have Eva Marie. Well, Eva Marie, fuck her. These are just, you know, examples of what people are making. So, in other words, the numbers and figures are just amazing. How much is Samoa Joe worth? That's a good question. You know, just looking and reading these questions, and it's amazing. A lot of people are Yeah. Well, Vince McMahon has a net worth of $1.12 billion. Shane has a net worth of $35 million. So the McMahons obviously are stacked. The net worths of these guys, holy hell. I'm reading off statistics. So Kevin Owens just wears shorts, does he? He's worth $10 million worth of just wearing shorts and being the United States champion. So you really, really want me to have a sense of humor and just laugh it off, you know, when more people started flooding the comment section, which I didn't, thankfully. But here it is, man. Not everyone's going to watch WWE because they're busy, you know, watching their own shit. But you still watch the pay-per-views, don't you? You still watch the programming, do you not? There's a lot of things that you must understand that when I do this show, I'm going to do it how I want to do it. Now, I did say I was going to mention something about the rise and fall of WCW. Back when it was Vader, Sting, Hogan, Savage, Flair, Piper, you know, everyone was coming from WWE of old to come to WCW to make WCW have life. You know, back when Ric Flair brought the Horsemen to WCW, I'm sorry, I got to segue that better. Back when, you know, fuck it. I was so engrossed in giving and dishing out numbers because some asshole, you know, who believes that, you know, he's higher up because he's a wrestler. And I'm going to segue, before I get to the rise and fall of WCW, I'm going to segue into workers' perspectives versus fans' perspectives. A worker's perspective is, man, I really thought we got the crowd going here, but we need to work on this here. Some workers work better on the fly. Some workers, you know, they just base it off of what, you know, they know is going to work and what's going to pop the crowd. Other workers have a hard time doing that. So what is a worker's perspective? Did we get the crowd going? Was there a dead spot in the match? How can I improve myself? From a fan's perspective is, man, I can't believe that they were a jackass, you know. They just don't ever think that just because you're a worker, I'm going to throw a little adage into this. Just because you're a worker does not mean you're above anybody. Just because you make money and you entertain fans does not make you a total celebrity just yet. I feel that from a fan's perspective, you know, I am welcome in certain people's eyes, and in certain people's eyes, not so much. So what am I referring to? And there's no promotion or two that doesn't welcome me anymore. I don't give a fuck. Then there's a certain group of people that when I go to shake their hand, they don't want anything to do with me. That's fine. I get that vibe from certain people because I realize, you know, this is just who I am. And if you don't like it, oh, well, it's the old adage. If you don't like me, move the fuck on. From a fan's perspective, I've seen workers, you know, that think their shit is good, but in actuality, it's not. But do I respect them for getting in the ring and doing things that I can't do? Sure. It's give and take. Do I say that outwardly on their Facebook? No. Do I tweet about them on Twitter? Not really. I mean, in some instances, I have tweeted or thought about tweeting to certain WWE superstars, but the truth is it really going to pan out for me? I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying. As a fan, you know, certain people see this guy like Bray Wyatt or Finn Balor or Samoa Joe they see certain people, they attach themselves to them, and they go watch just for that one specific person. So here's the deal. I say the following. I don't feel. I get stared at in a bad kind of way. But that's okay. That's okay. Because from a fan's perspective, can never be too certain of if a worker likes you or not. But does that matter when you go to a show? No, it doesn't. So here's my summary of the whole worker's perspective versus fan's perspective thing. If you are 100% certain that some wrestler does not like you, don't force it. Don't force yourself on it. Because as far as I'm concerned, you're okay. I mean, look, I've been to several shows. Is that going to hinder me going to a show and enjoying it? No. It's, you know, one of those things where it's trial and error. If they don't like you, I've learned, just let it go. And sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's hard because you want to offend, you want to have to be able to shake someone's hand, and then other times they're just not going to listen to you, so just move on. So from a fan's perspective, being rejected by a wrestler is kind of hard to deal with, or being, you know, not well-liked, you know, certain people like you, certain people don't. So the worker's perspective, you're behind the curtain, people want to come in, they want to see their favorite wrestler. You know, so workers are like, hey, cool, I'm a celebrity. Don't lie, because I know majority of us think like that. Some of us are lucky enough to get the humble gene in us and sit there and sign autographs and take pictures. And I'll tell you the truth, being a former manager, it's cool, you know, it's cool seeing the wrestler. Hold on one second, ladies and gents. I'm reading some of the Instagram questions again. My apologies. Okay, so that's good. Hang on one second, ladies and gents. I'm on the show.
I'm going to hook you up.
Anyways, ladies and gentlemen, as I was saying, if you're a professional wrestler, you tend to think, you know, this is how it is, this is what it is, whatever. So, my final perspective on the whole thing is like this. Workers' perspective works differently from each mindset of how they're going to entertain their fans and what merchandise they're going to sell to the fans. They're not all hard-headed assholes who sit on their high horse and just, you know, go to an arena and say, hey, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. They're not that type of person. So, from a fan's perspective, ooh, there's a lot of, you know, what fancy wrestlers, as they see them as the superheroes, the, you know, Superman, Captain America, whatever you want to describe a wrestler as. They are, you know, like looking and putting them on a pedestal, which then in turn gives the wrestler sometimes a big head and sometimes not. So, it's a give and take. It all depends on you, the person, or you, the worker. Are you the worker that's very mean to fans and calls them names, you know, calls them Mark because you can? Are you the fan that uses all the terminologies to annoy the wrestler to make them call you that name? Man, you know, Mark's a very demeaning name, but if you get, it's the equivalent to the word of calling a female a certain name, a very derogatory name. So, that's another thing I'd like to discuss with you. You know, it's like if you're not involved some way, shape, or form with this business, I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to be very, very close-minded, I guess you could say, but if not, if you're not involved with this business, man, all these questions. Okay, so I told you I wasn't going to stammer, so here it goes. I've got 16 minutes left to traipse back onto the track. Pro wrestling fans tend to have the tendencies to, you know, put in their discussion boards what they think should happen, and then people tend to jump on the bandwagon and say, well, I think this should happen too. Most fans don't get what they want. Why? Because if you give in to what a fan wants, you're basically like giving in to that child that's a spoiled brat in the candy store. And give them all the sweets at once, they're not going to want to come back, and so then it becomes stagnant. I believe 100% that yes, wrestling has evolved. You know, fan-wise, worker-wise, as workers are now more interactive, obviously, thanks to social media like Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. That's like a huge part, a huge proponent of getting yourself out there and making a platform for either, you know, as a fan, a show, or whatever, or a promoter, what have you, because promoters know what their people want. So, and this is, you know, just from what I've observed, certain promoters are like, well, the fans really want this. Certain people, you know, like, you know, in the Midwest, mainly, you won't ever find a promoter in the Midwest that doesn't have oddball intermissions, you know, like three intermissions at one time during a show. Okay. Oddball intermissions is something like two or three missions before the main event, which makes one wonder how many times do you have to have an intermission just to get to one main event, so people just keep buying stuff, I guess. I mean, there's people that know how to do it successfully, but to have yourself stuck in the 1980s professional wrestling, that's not a good thing. Like, I just find it funny how certain people are like, well, this is how professional wrestling is. They have a very closed mind as to whatever. It's really funny. The East, they have intermissions as well, and they have merch tables. Merch tables, from a fan's perspective, if they have money, they'll go out and get it. But if they don't, they still go out and get it, because I know a friend of mine who goes out and buys merchandise, and he's just a big wrestling fan, and he's also the host with the most, a.k.a. JR, as I like to call him. So fans' perspective of what a wrestler is some guy that they look up to, or a gal that they look up to, and they want to be somebody. If you're a little kid, you look up to a wrestler like they can do no wrong. So if they end up saying something or making them cry, the fan is, you know, kind of traumatized for life, or they'll forgive them because, you know, they're little, so they don't remember. a worker, how they look at a fan, you can tell, like, I've heard some conversations, and like I said, I observe, I'm like a piece of grass, I'm just there, I'm listening, you know, I'm like a fly on the wall that you don't see, not a horse fly, I am pretty fat, ladies and gentlemen, but the point is, certain workers, from what I've heard, you hear the conversation, oh, you know, that guy's Mark. They don't say that. And that's kind of a misconception. Because, you know, I've been in the back. I have seen personally what certain workers say or, you know, do and or hear what they say and also seeing what they do. You know, during 8x10 signings, they'll be all happy, joy, you know. But, you know, behind closed doors, some of the words that get said can be kind of like, man, I hope I'm not that guy. Or, man, I hope I'm not this dude. That's why it's the best saying in the world, mouth shut, eyes open. I'm still trying to learn that saying. But from being in a wrestling locker room and hearing different guys just shoot the shit and basically talk amongst one another, you'll hear things like the planning out of matches, how, you know, we want to work them over, what's going to get, you know, how we're going to work, this, that, the other. It's interesting, you know, being on that side of the spectrum, but also now being back on the fan side of the spectrum, I've seen how they interact with fans. Certain guys are comfortable, and certain guys are not comfortable with my presence. That's fine. I just tell it like it is, so if you don't want to hear it, you can shove it up your ass. That's just my take on it, okay, ladies and gents? From a fan's perspective, you're expecting to see a great show and have some autographs if you're lucky in a picture with one of the superstars. From a worker's perspective, you're just hoping that you don't get injured and you maintain a healthy lifestyle and make sure that you're having a decent, fun time. Because if you're not having fun during work and you're just forcing yourself, then you really shouldn't be doing this job. It's the same thing with a job. If you're not into it, why are you working? Period, point blank. So, in 10 minutes' time, I'm going to condense this down to make it make more sense. So, oh yes, and my all-time personal favorite, ECW. Certain fans just like it because of the off-the-wall moments, like Sabu and Terry Funk's barbed wire match way back when, or when Stone Cold Steve Austin was making fun of Sabu, or not Sabu, yeah, he was making fun of Sandman. So, I mean, little moments, tidbits, you know, matches I remember, you know, on Easter Sunday when the Sandman was crucified with barbed wire on Easter Sunday. Or better yet, you know, having the very first pay-per-view barely legal, for those of you who don't know. I, as a child, didn't have a lot of access to WWE. And the very first access was at a birthday party, and my friend invited me to watch my very first WWE event ever, which was, WWE WrestleMania 12. And it was on pay-per-view. And I remember thinking, ECW, I'm an ECW kid. I still watched it when it was closed circuit TV. You'd go over to my uncle's house and watch ECW. I remember watching Francine. I remember watching not just her, Rob Van Dam, Jerry Lynn, Taz, of course, and his, you know, certain feuds that we had. Okay, New Jack, Vic Grimes, which was insane. Oh, my God, dude. This is okay, Bill Alfonso, and then that's Beulah McGillicuddy, and he lost, I don't know how much blood he lost, or something like a pint and a half. But the man lost a lot of freaking blood. There's a lot of moments that I remember growing up, you know, over the 30 years that I watched wrestling, I remember when ECW was hitting their rough patches. and when Paul Heyman was still trying to keep the group afloat. So man, I'm trying to go back 30 years. Can't remember. Oh yes, I can. Very first show that I got taken to, there's throwing chairs, you know, Mick Foley and Lance Storm, because they're doing shitty chair shots, and I remember seeing just the chairs flying, and Joey Styles comes running in the ring, and he says, "We do not throw chairs at this event." Too late, because there's already, like, a freaking pile of chairs, you know, and they even had security and EMTs coming in the ring. I remember it was like they were rushing to get through this to make sure Terry Funk was okay, because Terry Funk's a crazy old man. What? There's plenty of examples of him, you know, feuding with Tommy Dreamer for one, getting choke slammed out of his shoes, and when he went into WWE, his feud with everyone pretty much on ECW, Sandman, Tommy Dreamer, the Douglas Brothers, Shane Douglas, I mean, Sabu, of course. I've never seen barbed wire. My fondest memory of Terry Funk was not at ECW One Night Stand. It was when he faced off with Sabu in that barbed wire match. It's just nuts. Like, matches like that are insane. They're not just... Because you look at the sick, twisted features of ECW. I mean, they not only just had barbed wire and tacks, they had great balcony matches, balcony table matches. They had, for, you know, they, if you look at their versions of things going on, they were the first Attitude Era. And if you don't believe me, you need to look up the network and go by the years of 94 through 97, and ECW was literally destroying WWE in ratings at the time. Now, if they were to come back and do the stuff that they did now, would they be getting ratings? Oh, wait, it's called CZW. Just watch their programming and see guys like Joey Janela, DDT. DDT is a girl in Descender Blocks, you know, just to make a point. That's not all of CZW, though. I mean, I'm pretty sure they have legitimized wrestling aside from death matches. So, what is my, you know, take on the rise and fall of WCW? Okay, like I told you earlier, the rise was probably from 91... No, it was 93 to about 98, not 99. And why? I could tell you this right now. Sting, Hogan, Harley Race, Vader, Savage, Flair, they all were a huge part. I mean, I used to rent tapes at Blockbuster just to, you know, watch what was on TV and see what was going on and see the matches and see, like, the old cage match, you know, Hogan versus Vader, because Hogan was so over in WCW. But, you know, I'm going to give my final take on what really, you know, ticked me off about professional wrestling. Enough talk about rise and fall of WCW. They had Goldberg and his run. His streak hit 180-something. I mean, you know, there's just a lot of things that terminated WCW, and I told you I was going to stop talking about it, but the NWO and it taking over entirely as too many cooks in the kitchen, as Cody Rhodes said on the documentary, he's not lying. When you have too many people in a group, you can't win. There's too many factors that are going to feature that. So So here's the deal. WCW died because there's too many cooks in the kitchen, so... That's it. So, in the remaining last 2 minutes, I'd like to say the following. Whatever you say on social media, I'm going to find and I'm going to roast. And if I don't find anything on social media, I'll find something that really bothered me, but I'm going to give it two perspectives on it just to be fair. You know, there's a positive and there's a negative. Is there a positive in seeing how you feel about a certain group of people because you're jealous of their success? I mean, you can't just be a big brute and wrestling gear and make money. I mean, Brock Lesnar did it for how many years and then he flunked. So I'm just saying, like, you can be as vicious as Braun Strowman and you can be as sadistic as Randy Orton once was, but the truth is, really, if you're going to stereotype what a wrestler dresses like, and you just say early on just to cover your tracks that, oh, you know, I was only saying things just to see how people would react. And I used to do the same stuff, dude, but I honestly feel, personally feel, it's a crock of shit, and so are you. So to finish this out, I enjoyed thoroughly roasting you and giving you figures and numbers because I figured that would get your attention. Do I have everyone's attention now, including yours? Have a nice day. It's my birthday. I'm having fun. And catch you on the flip side. How's it going? How you doing? Toodles.
The cost of personality. I know your anger, I know your dreams. I've been everything you wanna be. Oh, I'm the cost of personality. Like Mussolini.
See you next week.